Next case is NCAP v. The Scotts Company, 2015-1008. Mr. Weiss.
Thank you. May it please the Court. I want to start my arguments with the Board's decision on Roth and Lowe, the combination for obviousness. The Board made a factual error stating that Lowe teaches a coding or a coding process for a seed. The intervener agreed that a mistake was made but basically glossed over it. The record shows that one of skill in the art in the field of agglomeration concluded and demonstrated that Lowe, in combination with Ross, would not get the combined to create a coded seed. Specifically, NCAP presented the Madigan Declaration, which stated in several paragraphs that you cannot just agglomerate what's taught in Lowe around the seed. They presented testing, there were photos and evidence. You could not just do it. There was no evidence, the Board doesn't rely on anyone of ordinary skill in the art or anyone to state that the combination would work. Further, Dr. Sundstrom, who's Scott's expert, stated on the record that he did not review Lowe because it did not contain a seed. And further, Scott's itself did not rebut any of NCAP's evidence showing that you could not combine the references. Then there's a general point that the Board has made, which includes all the prior references. And that is, the Board concluded that on the definition of soil conditioning material, that the soil conditioning material must beneficially modify the soil to which the soil conditioning material is applied. That's a given. There is no dispute. That's the Board's definition. This affects every one of the references. With respect to Lowe, which is a paper mill sludge, the fact that Matthews is fly ash, there's no evidence showing that those materials beneficially modify the soil. In fact, there's evidence showing that it does not. But the Board agreed that NCAP provided evidence showing that that not all paper mill sludge would beneficially modify the soil, not all fly ash would beneficially modify the soil. Once the Board accepted that evidence, it was Scott's burden to prove that those materials had to have beneficially modified the soil, because that's the definition that the Board had found. When we look into the papers themselves, Lowe specifically teaches that their paper mill sludge is chemically inert. That's on AO183, 1:11:14, 1:24, and 2:4. When we look at fly ash now, which is the Matthews patent, again, the record shows that not all fly ash is the same, as it was found with the experts from both NCAP and Scott's experts, both agreed to that. When it came down to fly ash, when one looked to Matthews, Matthews specifically states that the coating materials, including fly ash, are inert material substances such as fly ash. And then it further states that the key to the system of permeability control is that different shaped inert particle ingredients. That's fly ash. So basically, the papers specifically state that the substances that the Board was claiming would beneficially modify the soil, the papers themselves say they're inert. They have no effect on the soil whatsoever. So therefore, based on the fact that none of the papers show that their materials that the Board found beneficially modify the soil, they can't anticipate or make obvious the claims of the 259 patent. Further, on another note, we believe that the Board's constructions of the claims were also incorrect. With regards to combination C capsule, we believe that the combination C capsule should have been construed. Scotts originally requested that it be construed in their petition. All of the declarants, Baker, Maddox, Madigan, and Krishak, found that the combination C capsule should have been construed. The Board did not construe it. With regards to soil conditioning material, the 259 patent at column 8, lines 42 through 52, gives a full definition of what a soil conditioning material is. The Board just took a piece of that, the first sentence, and didn't use the whole paragraph to define it. Scotts themselves in their petition quoted the full definition of column 8, lines 42 through 52, which NCAP put in, as the definition, and the Board found that neither Scotts neither any of the declarants were correct.
Are you conceding that certain claims are anticipated by Schreiber or Matthews?
No, I am not, Your Honor. As I just stated before, in order for it to be anticipated, let's just state with Flyish, for instance, which is Matthews, you'd have to have a soil condition material that beneficially modifies the soil. Flyish, as I just stated, is an inert material. It has to be inert, according to the teachings of Matthews. And therefore,
but
if it's inert...
But aren't the teachings of a reference questions of fact to which we owe the Patent Office deference?
In this regard, Your Honor, they didn't make that determination. The determination they made was is that fly ash, because fly ash is an example in the 259 patent, because paper mill sludge is an example in the 259 patent, they didn't take the further step to say it has to beneficially modify the soil. They just said because fly ash is there, because fly ash is in the 259 patent and fly ash is in Matthews, it's the same. Because paper mill sludge is in the 259 patent and because paper mill sludge is in low, it's the same. That was based on the board's own definition, stating that, and in fact, they included some examples in their definition. But even they, when they had to go back to those examples, stated that if it's paper mill sludge, fly ash, whatever those materials are, they must beneficially modify the soil. So it's not a question of fact. They didn't observe their own definition. They never made there's no determination whatsoever in their holding saying that the fly ash, the paper mill sludge beneficially modifies the soil. And in fact, it can't because it's inert.
Don't they say that at A26, though? I thought they said it at A26. Specifically. Well, a person born near scale on the art would have understood that a non-toxic fly ash could be used to coat the seed as a soil condition material and that using toxic materials harmful to the seed should be avoided.
Correct.
We determined that a person born near scale on the art would interpret Matthews as using non-toxic fly ash beneficial to the soil.
I agree, Your Honor, with they focused on non-toxic versus toxic. They didn't go to...
But I heard you just say they didn't find, they made no finding on that.
With regard to they stated that one skill in the art would not have chose a toxic substance, a toxic fly ash, because fly ash can be toxic. The argument here is that they didn't focus on the fact that fly ash could be inert. An inert material would not beneficially modify the soil. That's where they skipped that section totally. They relied on toxic versus non-toxic, which is a pretty simple argument, rather than addressing the fact that the patent itself, Matthews, as I cited, states that fly ash is inert.
What about your argument on the combination seed capsule? I heard you saying that both parties submitted the same very long construction from I think, the abstract of the patent. Is that right? I mean, I thought I heard you just say that. I was thinking, well, doesn't the board have an independent duty to interpret the claims regardless of what the parties assert?
Right. No, Your Honor, I didn't say it. The combination seed capsule, we both parties stated that it deserved a claim construction. We didn't have the same construction, but both parties submitted a construction, and the board turned around and did not construe the claim whatsoever.
What is your basis for reading in such a long definition into the claim?
Because it says right in the abstract, a combination seed capsule is, and then it goes through exactly what it, it says the invention pertains to a combination seed capsule wherein each capsule includes... And then it goes, the combination seed capsules are made by, the combination seed capsules provide, it goes into a whole definition of what the combination seed capsule is. And I believe that
Does that mean we'd have to read, into most patents where it says, uses a word that's in the claim and then says what the beneficial properties are, that we always have to read those into the claim?
No, Your Honor. But in this particular case, if one goes to the file history, and one looks at the other claims which all relate back to the combination seed capsule, this gives life and meaning to the claim. That's why it's important.
Gives life and meaning to the claim?
These particular statements give life and meaning to the claim. If these statements were in the summary of the invention, the board probably may have concluded that they were a definition that needed to be construed. They may have looked at that they're in the abstract as not wanting to use them to construe the claim. Well, they didn't construe the claim at all, actually.
My understanding, I would say that whether it's in the abstract or the summary, the question is whether there's an express definition.
Okay, I agree, Your Honor. Thank you. Okay. Should I continue?
Sure.
Okay, so for another minute. Okay, the other important part to understanding this is that every seed coating has a different effect on why it's being used, why elements in the coating are used. For instance, Matthews describes a hard, physically hard coating that's used for planting so that when it's in the planters or it's stored on the shelves, the coating doesn't break. Schreiber discusses a coating where it delays germination. And one of the things that you brought up was, am I giving up on Schreiber for anticipation? The answer is no, because Schreiber uses their coating internally. Their supposed soil conditioning material is an internal coating. And the whole purpose of it is you plant these seeds in bad weather, and then when the temperatures are right and the moistures are right, that the seed will then germinate. The issue there is a great portion of those seeds will never germinate. Therefore, a great portion of the quote-unquote soil conditioning material that they're claiming is a soil conditioning material will never even touch the soil. This is an argument made during the...
What is the evidence of that?
It's in Schreiber itself. Schreiber says that a great majority of the seeds will not germinate. And this was brought from the board, and this was an inherency argument. And the board said, and I could quote them, that even 50% of the seeds were to germinate, that would be enough for an inherency. And the way I read inherency, and you can look at the oral argument there, was it has to necessarily be present. That's the interpretation of what inherent means. And if only 50% of the seeds will ever have the soil conditioning material even touch the soil, that can't be inherency. I know I'm into my time.
We will save it for you, Mr. Weiss.
Thank you.
Ms. Rashid.
May it please the court. These are hollow claims based on a hollow specification that lacks the complexity that NCAP alleges. All the declarations that they submitted are just not commensurate in scope.
Could you speak up a little bit, please?
Yes, Your Honor. I'll help you if I can't even move that. The point is that these are just hollow claims. There's nothing to these claims based on a hollow specification. The specification lacks the complexity that NCAP alleges that it has, and all the declarations that they cite are just not commensurate in scope with the claim language.
Are you raising written description grounds when you talk about hollow specification?
No.
We're talking about obviousness and anticipation?
I am only talking about anticipation and obviousness. All I'm saying is that, at best, all that these claims require is a seed coated with soil conditioning materials that are already well-known in the art. Right, and it's not, and that's not even the inventive concept here. The inventive concept here is this idea that you have the soil conditioning material that's close to the seed, that covers the seed, and because of that, it creates these properties of not only supporting the soil, that it, when it's planted, it also supports the seed. So all of the board was already overly generous in its claim construction here. But even if we gave NCAP everything else that they wanted, it doesn't change the analysis here, because all of those asserted benefits, potential benefits, for which there's no evidence at all in the specification and no data at all of that just naturally flows from the fact that this is a combination product. And so, even if we agreed with them on the claim construction issue, they're still anticipated and obvious based on that.
I want to ask you a question about the motion to amend.
Yep.
And just what is your response to whether we should remand in view of the PTAB's decision in Master Image, which further clarified idle free?
There's no reason for the court to remand here. All that Master Image said was that it clarified that when idle free said that you have to show patentable distinction over the prior art of record and the prior art known to the patent owner, what that meant was simply that you had to show patentability over all material art that is in the proceeding. And so here, it doesn't really affect the analysis. This case falls squarely within Microsoft Reproxicon, where the references that were cited were part of the proceeding here, because they're not only were they raised in the petition, they were also raised in the opposition. So there's no reason to remand on that basis. And not only that, that was just one ground for denying the motion to amend. The board cited additional grounds, the fact that they didn't provide a claim construction for all the additional limitations that they provided, the fact that there was no technical disclosure supporting any of those those asserted limitations. So, I mean, even if you discount, you know, the board's holding on based on Simmons and Evans, there's more than enough reasons for the board to deny their motion to amend. Any other further questions?
Nothing further.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Mr. Weiss has some rebuttal time.
Your Honor, with her argument that the claims are hollow, the spec is hollow, I totally disagree. This is a marketable product that's been on the market. There are several companies that have licensed this product. If they didn't feel that the patent had any merit to it, they wouldn't need to license us or believe that the patent is valid and move forward with this. Second of all, with regards to the motion to amend, there was an incorrect statement made by intervener that we did request to extend the page limit, and the patent board denied us. It's in the opinion, and in fact, they even cited to a case which stated we should have asked for more pages. We did, and it was denied. It's almost impossible to fulfill all the requirements of claim construction, technical disclosure, responding to every piece of prior art in a 15-page limit, including a list of the claims, which, according to the case cited by them, if we would have asked for an extension, we probably would have been able to put the claims into an appendix, which wouldn't have been counted against our page limit. Unfortunately, it wasn't granted. Going back to the claims themselves, where she said everything, no argument about anticipation or obviousness, other than the fact that she said it should be. Again, Your Honor, according to the board's own decision, they stated specifically that soil-conditioned material must beneficially modify the soil other than nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, or plant nutrient. That's the definition the board came up with that we had to respond to. The Scotts did not put any evidence in stating that any of the prior art fulfills that definition. Okay, this is not just a soil-conditioned material, as the intervener would like to say. The soil-conditioned material has a specific definition that the board stated, that we had to follow, that the patent states in it, that the board found, and that the prior art has to meet in order to anticipate and or make obvious. The prior art did not meet that definition that they stated. Therefore, the prior art should not be found anticipatory or obvious. And there's evidence, and we have, as evidence, we have declared, all of our declarants have stated exactly what we're stating. Dr. Caters, Dr. Baker, Mr. Krishek, Mr. Magan have all found that the prior art doesn't meet this. Their own declarants have found that in order for these materials, they have to beneficially modify the soil. They agree with the board's definition, yet no one points to any reasoning in the opinion stating that they've met this definition. And therefore, when the board cites to fly ash, paper mill sludge, etc., there is no citations to the patent, other than like what you said about it being non-toxic, which is not what's claimed. It says it must beneficially modify. It doesn't say toxic, non-toxic. The definition says beneficially modify. If something is inert, it cannot beneficially modify if it's inert. And low is inert. Matthews is inert. They teach that they must be inert. And the third one, Schreiber, teaches that it's within the inner layer and that it's not inherent. We've already proven that. It's my time, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Weiss. We'll take the case under advisement.
Thank you very much.